This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Right. Are you here? Are you ready? Good. You've come to the right place. Welcome along. It's another episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. This is the only show, my name's Dan, by the way, hello, this is the only show, let's get back to it, that zooms you through the galaxy, uncovers everything inside that's strange and wonderful and a little bit deadly, and then we get you back home, fingers crossed, in one case, in one piece. I mean, you've not signed anything, so I don't really mind about that. But anyway, this week we're looking at plans to save gorillas and whales. Also, we'll chat to someone whose job is to follow these incredibly amazing creatures all around the world and uncover what they're really doing. Also, we'll travel to the hurricane capital of the world, and we've got some shout-outs and hellos to say to you after we catch up with one of our favourite geniuses on Fun Kids. This is Professor Hallux, and this week is looking inside your body.
Professor Hallux's Kaleidoscope Antibiotic. Oh, I don't feel well. I think I've got an infection. Nurse Nanobot? Computer?
The human body is full of microbes, tiny living organisms that are found pretty much everywhere on Earth. There are five main types of microbes, with three of the most common being viruses, like the common cold, bacteria that can cause pneumonia, and fungi that can cause athlete's foot. Most microbes cause no harm to the body, and many help keep you alive, so it's important to look after them. Some, though, can be harmful and cause infections.
Professor, use a tissue! Tissues help to stop harmful microbes from spreading. I'll tell you what, why don't I give you a checkup? I could take a look inside your body to see what's going on. One minute, I'll charge up the heli-telly bubble.
Ah, my amazing invention that can shrink us to the size of an atom. 50 nanometers should do it, Nanobot. That's 1,500 times smaller than a human hair is wide. Bon voyage!
Heli-telly bubble, ready to launch in 3, 2, 1.
Engaging thrusters. Microbes detected. Setting bearings. Entering your mouth. Gosh, it's crowded in here. Looks like the sensors picked up a beautiful streptococcus. This microbe is a type of bacteria. They are single-cell organisms which often grow in communities. They look like chains, and if I try to touch one, they're very slippery. Streptococci are responsible for a large majority of problems in the mouth, from throat infections to tooth decay. And as well as streptococci, there's lots of other different types of bacteria. In fact, there's so many, the computer can't keep up.
Staphylococcus, Prevotella, Bacteroides.
The number's gone off the scale. There's millions of bacteria in here. It's probably because bacteria like the sugar you eat.
Excuse me. Mine's quite a clean mouth, I'll have you know. I brush my teeth twice a day. If I didn't clean them regularly, I could have as many as a billion bacteria hanging around on just one tooth.
Ew!
Come on, Nanobot! You know that, like many microbes, most bacteria are nothing to worry about. Most are entirely harmless, and some are even extremely useful to us.
Lactobacillus helps turn milk into yogurt and helps food to be digested, whilst Bacteroides help bodies make important vitamins.
Well, even though it's bacteria central in here, it's all looking pretty normal. I don't think the streptococcus is making you feel poorly because there isn't much sugar around here.
Microbe detected.
Just taking a detour into the nose. Oh, yes, I can see a whole host of different microbes in here, stuck to all the hairs. In fact, they're viruses. The damage they've caused to these cells has made the delicate skin very irritated and sore. There's could be the reason you're feeling rotten. This gang are called rhinovirus. They cause the common cold. Each individual virus looks like a bubbly ball, and they're very small indeed, only 30 nanometers wide. You could fit over 30,000 of them on a full stop. I'll take an image for the databank.
It says here that there's over 200 types of rhinovirus, which is probably why the common cold is, well, so common.
Virus comes from a Latin word which means slimy, liquid, or poison.
Ha! Well, I can understand why with all that snot they produce. But viruses can't reproduce without using cell material from other living things. And that can cause damage in the process, which is what causes the unpleasant symptoms. How do we know it's a virus, Nanobot? After all, there's lots of different types of microbe.
Well, viruses are some of the very smallest microbes, so size is a clue. We can also tell by the way they reproduce. This one has invaded a cell and is forcing it to create thousands of copies of the virus. That's how viruses reproduce. And given the number of cells they've invaded, I think I've found your infection.
Good work, Nanobot. Time to head home. Set the heli-telly bubble coordinates for the lab at Chew.
Professor Hallux's Kaleidoscope Antibiotic. With support from eBug and Public Health England. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallux or visit e-bug.eu.
I've got a brilliant question here, sent in by someone who's got an even more brilliant name. Max Ostermeyer Pang has been over to funkidslive.com. He sent a question to my page there. If you want to go and say hello, do that, by the way. The Fun Kids website's a brilliant place to get in touch. Max asks, what happened in the very first second before the Big Bang? Right before there was the universe, there was nothing. What happened? Well, Max, I'll be honest, I think you might have answered your own question. Nothing. Nothing happened. The truth is, I don't know. Because the truth is, I don't think anyone knows. Loads of time and lots of money has been spent trying to figure out exactly that question. What happened in the very second before the Big Bang? How did something, all the universe around us, how did that come from nothing? CERN, which is a big space centre, it's in Switzerland, they built the Large Hadron Collider. And for the past 10 years or so, they've been smashing particles together really fast in the hope that that would help them find out how you can make something from nothing. I love the question, Max. Thanks for sending it in, and I will do my best to find a space and physics expert who can answer it properly for you in the next few weeks. Also, as well as funkidslive.com, you can get in touch with me over on the iTunes podcast store, if that's how you're listening to the show. Hello to James Kendall and to William Cornwall, who have left us a little review on there. I'd love it if you did that as well, by the way. If you've got a science question that you want answered, it's one of the best places to get in touch, I think. Head over to the iTunes podcast store, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, and then in the bottom, leave a little review, write a question in that box, and we'll get it answered for you in the next few weeks. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, this week, our special guest is a man whose job is to track some of the most amazing creatures on the planet. Nick Dyer is a wildlife photographer, and he dedicates his time to one particular type of animal, and he highlights how hard it is for them to survive. Nick's on the line. Hey, Nick.
Morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. So just tell us a little bit more about the amazing thing that you do as a job.
Okay, so I'm a wildlife photographer and an author of a new book on my favourite animal. And I call them the painted wolves. And they're also known, some of your listeners might know them as wild dogs or even painted dogs. But they're not actually dogs, and that's important to point out.
So I guess we should start very quickly then. What's the difference for you between a wolf and a dog? How do we define the species?
Okay, so let's think of three animals here. So you've got the wolf, which everyone knows, and all our domestic dogs, from the Great Dane to the Chihuahua, actually come from that wolf. And then way back in time, there was, and they're all under this thing called Canis, yeah? And then, and that's a genus. And then further, and there's another genus called Lycaon. And in that genus, there's only one animal, and that's Lycaon pictus, who is the painted dog, the wild dog, or the painted wolf. And Lycaon pictus means painted wolf.
So tell us more about what they get up to. You've been studying these for a while now. You've tracked them all around. You're in Zimbabwe right now?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm sitting in town. I'm not in the bush at the moment, but I'm actually in the capital, in Harare.
So you've tracked them all over Africa. Tell us more about what they get up to every day, about the daily life of the painted wolf.
Okay, so the first thing to understand is that they live in packs, and those packs can be just, you know, a handful of wolves to up to about 40. And they live in these packs. They are run by an alpha female. She's the boss. She's the general, and she's the only one who actually has puppies. All the other wolves act as aunts and uncles and babysitters. Even one behaved like a doctor. So whenever one got wounded or injured, she would pop around and just lick all the wounds for them. They hunt mainly impala or kudu or other antelopes, and they are known as probably the most efficient predator in the whole of Africa. Up to 80% of their hunts end in a kill, and that's far more than a lion or a leopard. These are incredible animals.
So what makes them so efficient? Because I know, so you've said that they're more efficient than a lion, but one of the reasons that lions are quite good is because they spend so much time conserving their energy, don't they? They sleep for like 20 hours of a 24-hour day before they finally get enough strength, and then they go out and then they kill. What makes a painted wolf more efficient than a big beast like that?
Okay, so I mean, like lions, so lions are kind of nocturnal, but the actual painted wolves, they sleep all day, and they wake and they hunt in the morning and in the evening. So they're known as diurnal. And what makes them so efficient is that, yes, they do conserve energy that way, but they also love to play. So they play with each other, they run and chase and, you know, nibble each other, almost limbering up before the hunt. And then they go into this stalking mode and hunt as a pack. And so they stalk up, get quite close, and then they launch this huge attack. And they grab the impala and then bring it down. But they're very, very fast. Some say they can reach up to 70, 75 kilometers an hour. So, I mean, they're not quite cheetah fast. And the other thing is they've got incredible stamina. So they can go for much longer than their prey. So they don't give up easy.
Let's talk about the other end of the food chain then. Who are their main predators? Who are they running away from?
Okay, so their main predators are impala, where I'm from, but they would also hunt the kudus, dik-diks, you know, whatever is the prevalent antelope in the area is their main food source. But they've also been known to hunt, baby buffaloes or even warthogs. But what's quite incredible in Manapools, where I do all my photography on foot, is that they actually have started to hunt baboons, which has been never heard of before in any scientific journal or anything like that.
And so in their social groups, their packs, Nick, is it all fairly carefree and responsible, and they pay attention to the hierarchy? I ask this because this weekend I know that painted wolves, they're a focus of the new David Attenborough show, Dynasties. Now, last week we saw chimps, and there was a lot of friction there. There was a lot of animals that were constantly wanted to be the head of the group. Is it the same with the painted wolves? Are there always different females vying to be the queen?
No, I mean, that can happen, but it's very, very rare. So when a pack gets together, so there will be some roaming males and roaming females, and they'll meet up, and there can be some friction then. But then we're not quite sure, we don't really know how, but they elect a female. And then she becomes the leader. She's like she's the alpha female, the queen, general, absolutely everything. And she leads the pack. She is the boss, and everyone finds their pecking order down below her. So that you do occasionally, you'll have an alpha male, and he's the only one that would actually breed with her. And very occasionally, there will be a fight between the males. But this might happen every 3 years, generally, or something like that, that a new male will get more dominant. But generally, after that, the pack is incredibly harmonious. So with lions, you get a lot of competition, a lot of aggression. The male eats first, and then the females, and then the pups. But what happens with the dogs or the wolves? They effectively let the pups eat first. Then they will make sure that any individual that is wounded or couldn't hunt because it's hungry gets actually fed, and then the others will sort of like, you know, eat from the carcass, and if they want a bit, they sort of beg with submission as opposed to try and steal it from the others.
And what are they like when you're around, Nick? You've been following them from a while, taking their pictures. How close do they let you come? Do they ever try and eat you?
Right, no. I mean, there's been no recorded instance of them attacking a human being. Generally, most of the time, if you got out your vehicle, in your vehicle, you could get quite close. But if you got out your vehicle, they'll generally scarper. But, you know, because I've been doing it a long time in Manapools, it's the only park in Africa where you're allowed to walk on foot at your own risk. So I've been doing this for quite some time, and I've spent my time, you know, getting gradually closer and closer. And they've now kind of, you know, they're not really bothered with me. I mean, I never interfere with them. I never annoy them. But they let me get reasonably close, maybe sort of like 10 meters away or something like that. And that gives me a great opportunity to do great photographs.
And now, lastly, if you're listening to this, I want you to do something. I want you to head to nicholasdyer.com. And the first thing that you'll see is, honestly, it's one of the most breathtaking pictures you're ever likely to have in front of your eyes. It's two painted wolves, and one in their mouth has got the bitten off face of what looks like a chimpanzee. Can you tell us a bit more about this, Nick, the photo that I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually the head of a baboon. I mentioned earlier that this is the only place in Africa where they've ever been witnessed to actually hunt baboons. There was a baboon explosion a few years ago, and it's almost like the dogs found this new food source and it's trying to rebalance the ecosystem. But you know what happens here? The other great thing about these animals is that they are such good fun. They just play with each other and play with anything they can find all the time. You know, just like your own puppies would actually do. And in this instance, so they had finished eating the baboon, the puppies had, and then they thought, great, we can have a massive ball game with this. So they picked up the head of the baboon and went charging around. I was lying on my stomach taking the pictures, and they were just charging around with this head for about 20, 30 minutes. At one point, one of the puppies came up and actually offered me the head and sort of said, do you want to join in? But, you know, it's actually a lot of fun.
It is, seriously, if the only thing that you listen to in this show is that, go to Nick's website, nicholasdyer.com, and look at this photo. You say you've got a book out, Nick?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I've been following these guys for the last 6 years, and obviously taking lots and lots of pictures. And you'll get to see them if you click on the Painted Wolf site on my website. You'll see lots of these, pictures of these dogs. So you'll get an idea of it and having fun hunting and all that. And then I worked with an amazing conservationist called Peter Blinston, who runs something called the Painted Dog Conservation out here in Zimbabwe. Because, I mean, one thing to say is that these animals are desperately endangered. There's only 6,500 left in the world. And 100 years ago, there were 500,000. So there's like 1% left of these poor guys. So we produced this book called Painted Wolves, A Wild Dog's Life. And all the profits we make from it are going into something called the Painted Wolf Foundation, which is, at the moment, we've got this website up. And the foundation just explains everything you want to know about these incredible creatures.
Brilliant. Head to it, please go. It's nicholasdyer.com. Nick, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Brilliant, Dan. Love talking to you.
Right, time for this week's Dangerous Dan, where we take a look at the most mean and evil things in the universe. And today, we're headed to the hurricane capital of the world. The Cayman Islands, they're a group of islands and they belong to Britain, and they lie in the ocean just off the coast of Cuba by the Caribbean, and they're known for their beautiful beaches, the golden sun, the glorious sea creatures, but also it's known as the hurricane capital of the world. Scientists say that Grand Cayman, which is the largest of the islands, it's hit by a massive hurricane every 2 years. Now, do you remember this? We've spoken to an expert on this show all about hurricanes before. They're defined as a rapidly rotating storm system. They've got strong winds, large storms, a massive rain. And these islands, they're never that far away from one. In the last 100 or so years, 64 storms have battered the island with catastrophic results. Just over 10 years ago, Hurricane Ivan, which is a Category 5 storm, it lashed winds of over 150 miles an hour onto Grand Cayman. It surged a storm towards it. It wiped out 70% of the island's building. It caused over $3 billion worth of damage. It might be a nice place to go on holiday, but it surely is too hard to relax on Grand Cayman. Severely dangerous place. It's the hurricane capital of the world. And while we're speaking of hurricanes, with this week's Dangerous Dan, it's time for a brand new feature on the show. We're looking at the climate that happens all around the world with Marina Ventura.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers.
Now, we all like talking about the weather. In fact, people in Britain are well known for it.
The weather's quite good, it's quite hot and it's quite sunny.
Windy and very cold.
A bit rainy.
Freezing.
About a bit sunny.
Very windy. All of the leaves are falling off the trees.
Talking about the weather is one of the ways we start conversations, especially with people we don't know. One of the reasons for this is because it's something we have in common with everyone around us. If it's a rainy day and I get soaked in a downpour, you might have got wet too. And if it's freezing cold, then you're probably feeling it as well. And weather is a topic that everyone has an opinion about. Maybe it's chillier than it was yesterday. Perhaps you didn't expect to need a coat because you thought it was going to be a bit warmer. Not knowing quite what to expect means it's often surprising. That's why people like to read, listen to, or watch weather forecasts every day to help make sure they've got the right clothes on.
And with rain heading down south, tomorrow is set to be wet, so don't forget your umbrella.
After all, no one likes getting soaked. But weather's quite a strange thing. Even if it's cold and wet on one day, the next day can be very different. And not everyone gets the same weather, even when they're in the same country.
Schools in the north of England will be shut today due to heavy snow. But in the Midlands, there's no snow, so schools are open as usual. Sorry, kids.
So as you can see, weather is constantly changing, which is probably why it's so interesting. As we've seen, weather forecasts help us to know what to expect, but even without them, we have a feeling about what the weather should be like at different times of the year. We expect it to be cold in winter and warmer in summer. Have you ever wondered why this is? Let's find out. Let's ask MapApp. He's great at explaining things.
It's all to do with climate. There's a saying, weather is what you get, and climate is what you expect. And that's a great way to remember the difference. Weather describes what the conditions are like at a particular time and place, whilst climate is what the weather is generally like at that time of year. Here in the UK, winters are generally mild, and summers, well, they don't get too hot. We have what's called a temperate climate.
So how do they figure out what the climate is?
Scientists constantly take measurements of the weather, things like temperature and rainfall, and they do this over many years. This gives them a lot of information and helps them to see patterns. These patterns help describe the climate.
Most people will never have seen those measurements, but we still know that our winters are usually cold. How come?
During everyone's lifetimes, people learn about the patterns in weather. And as you've described, because weather is a popular topic of conversation, these ideas have always been shared. What is interesting is that just like the weather, those patterns that make up our climate can gradually change too. And because scientists keep track of weather measurements from the past, they can spot these slow changes.
Fascinating, Mappy. Next time, we'll explore how climates differ in different parts of the world. See you then.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world. Find out more at funkidslive.com/marina.
Shall we talk about all the science that has been in the news this week then? It's good news to start because prospects look better for the mountain gorilla and for a few whales under the sea after years of conservation measures have finally helped them out. These include hunting bans and anti-poaching patrol. They've helped these creatures who were really at risk stay alive. As well as the mountain gorilla, numbers of the fin whale, the western grey whale and the Rothschild giraffe are rising too. Brilliant way to start science in the news. Also carrying on, astronomers have discovered a planet orbiting one of the closest stars to our sun. The planet's mass looks to be about three times bigger than our own, so it's classed as a super-Earth. It orbits Barnard's star, which is only six light years away. And finally, scientists have found evidence that Greenland hides the impact of a huge crater that hit us from outer space. A 31-kilometer-wide hole came to light when experts examined radar images of the rock underneath Greenland. They think it was dug out by a 1.5-kilometer-wide asteroid that hit the Earth between 12,000 and 3 million years ago. That is the end of this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. And seriously, if you take away anything from this show, it's to go and have a look at that photo that Nick Dyer, the wildlife photographer, told us about earlier. It's on his website, nicholasdyer.com. It will just leave you utterly speechless that someone can get that close to animals and that they do such things to other animals. Also, while you're online, remember, if you've got a science question that you want answered by a proper expert on our show, let us know about it. Leave it as a review over on the iTunes podcast store. While you're on the iTunes podcast store too, it's one of the best ways that you can hear all of our brilliant Fun Kids Science series. Some of them you've heard in today's episode. They're all on there. They're on the free Fun Kids app, and you can find us at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, we're the UK's biggest children's radio station, where you can get us all around the country on your DAB digital radio. We are on that free Fun Kids app, and you can hear us at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.